When is a game allowed to be delayed? In this era of ultra-detailed, ultra-involved, more staff than a movie, multi-studio, longer development period timeframes with your customers expecting perfection, how could anyone reasonably provide a reliable estimate for a game's release? Those questions are irrelevant because they come in reaction to the more important earlier question, when do you decide to delay a game's release? I don't work at Rockstar, I don't know the answer, but I do know what happened. Now it's time for your hosts, Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki to tell you the new release date you might already know and the rest of the week's gaming news. Starting right now on the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet. Welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio, and we are live once again tonight with episode number 1045 of our program for today, May the 4th, 2025. Yes, yes, May the 4th be with you, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. Except I have Star Trek to talk about tonight, so y'all are just going to have to deal. But we'll get into that later. Maybe they want to talk about Star Wars. Say hello to Dark Soccer, Jamie Summers.
Hiss.
What? You're not a Trek fan? Hiss. Hiss back.
I didn't say I wasn't. it's like you like pancakes, so you must not like waffles.
Yeah.
No, you can like both. Yeah, it doesn't have to be either or.
You can like both. You can like both. I like Trek a little more, but I appreciate both. So, yeah, it's fine.
And to be honest, it doesn't matter to me what other people like. It only matters what I like.
How are you doing?
Snarky.
Yeah. I couldn't tell. But
kinda, I'm in a mood, okay? I'm in a mood.
Do we ever have any other Jamie here on this program?
What? No, I'm in a super mood. I'm in not like a super mood, not the super mood.
Not the super snarktendo.
I've just had a day of it. I am in the point where I am sick of shit.
Are we at the detox meme? I've had it officially. Are we there?
I spread La Mer on my toast. I'm sure, bitch.
All right. Well, let's see what kind of mood he's in. Say hello to Techmaster Loki. How are you doing, Loki?
Is tired a mood?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's where I am right now. Absolutely tired is a mood.
I've been tired. I will settle tired.
Yeah, that works. Loving the Mario Kart playing behind you tonight. Which Mario Kart is that?
It's modded Mario Kart.
Is it? I was like, which one is that? Is that the Wii one? But it looks better. What is
Mario
modded?
Kart Wii. Mario Kart Wii Deluxe with like several hundred tracks.
Wow, several hundred tracks. Amazing what those modders do. I'm just giggling because the name's very funny, but that's really impressive. Good job, modders, even though that's certainly a legal gray area. But come on, all of those people are going to buy Mario Kart World, $80 or not. All those people, it's just pouring into the Mario Kart fandom, right?
Yeah.
I got to play Mario Kart less than 24 hours ago. I was at Super Nintendo World. So, yeah, very, very last minute decision. Within the last, 4 weeks, I decided I was going to go see Kylie Minogue a second time. And Alan was in on the plan. We were like, you know what? We're going to go see our Star Trek cruise friend, Sean, who is out here from the Midwest, who was going to go see the Kylie show in L.A. And we were like, you know what? We were able to get tickets, and they weren't, overpriced. They were reasonable, and we were like, you know what? Let's just fucking go. Let's go on a road trip. Let's go see Kylie a second time. I don't usually follow a lot of concerts to see them multiple times, but for Kylie, who I've actually never seen live before this, but have liked for a long time, it was worth it. But we made a very last minute decision, within the last week. So when we were doing the last OLR, I did not know I would be talking about Super Nintendo World tonight. But within the last week, we decided, you know, as long as we're in LA, Universal's got this thing going on right now called Fan Nights, which is kind of, in a way, it's their answer to Disney and all the special nights that they do. But also Universal's had the Horror Nights for some time. So I think this is them trying to find ways to do that at different times of the year to try to bring in those nighttime dollars. So we were able to go to the park at 7 p.m. and we stayed till about midnight. Technically, they were open till 2 a.m., but I can't imagine going that late. And not everything was open past 10 p.m. or 11 p.m. Some rides closed early. We had to do the Mario Kart ride before, I think, 10:30 was when it closed. But we were able to go in Nintendo World. We were able to do it. And it was fine. It's a really neat sort of experience. The ride queue is very impressive. everything in Nintendo World is just really like impressive to behold. The ride itself, though, I just didn't love the creative direction they went with it. I'm going to be honest. I did not like the whole VR. Like, it wasn't even VR. It was like you put this headset on with goggles. But when I say goggles, I mean like a plastic visor that hangs over your head. And I'm assuming the visor is actually some sort of projector with the image. I'm assuming that's somehow how the magic works, that sort of thing. Because as you look around, you see Mario Karters going all around you. And you can actually look down at your wheel and you see how many coins and shells that you have. And so the game is that you're supposed to hit the Bowser and the Koopa kids with golden shells, and you're supposed to not hit Mario and Princess and all the Mario team people. And when it says turn left and right, you're supposed to follow that, and that's how you get coins, and you're supposed to get like so much. I kind of found the whole thing really distracting from what was otherwise a pretty interesting blacklight ride. Because, you know, Universal has these huge sound sets that, you know, they do these big things with. If you've ever been on The Mummy or Transformers is really good. And some of this, I'm assuming Orlando has very similar shit. I don't like to give the woman who wrote the Wizard book any acknowledgement, but I will say in the pre-days when I was willing to go on that ride, that was a very impressive ride too. So like, you know, the Simpsons ride all these years later, which I think was originally Back to the Future, still really holds up. So like, you know, they got some really interesting concepts. I just didn't I found the hologram thing to be very distracting because it was all nonsensical. It didn't really line up with the blacklight ride that you were going through. And I felt like my visor was off because you aim by looking, which is the worst aiming system ever, because if the thing is slightly off, then the shell's just going to go wherever it wants. And so there
You know, 10, 20 year ago, VR tech that they're implementing there, you know, Oculus DK2 type tech.
Yeah. So the interesting thing was there were three of us in the car. So there's actually five of us at the park, but they put three of us in one car and two of us in the other. And so they put a single rider next to us. Well, the single rider we got was Big Gamer. He was Big Gamer. He rode this ride all the time. It was like trying to like tell us to what to aim for and stuff, where to get the big points. And I was like, I don't expect that this person knows who I am, nor do I expect that having, you know, a 23-year-old podcast necessarily makes me the world best gamer. But it did take a little something out of like, I just want to like experience this, bro. Like,
I would have told him. I would have just told him.
I probably should have, but you know. It's just like, one of those things.
I don't care.
I know.
I'm in a mood. Remember, I'm in a mood.
But I'm just going to be honest. I thought Toy Story's Midway Mania was a more fun game. I do still think the Mario Kart ride, if you're a Nintendo fan, is worth doing once in your life. Like, I think it's really impressive, and just the queue is incredible, and everything is great. But I just I don't think it, for me, has the same replayability that Midway Mania does. Like, quite honestly, I would want to ride the ride once and just ignore the game. I think that's what I'm going to do next time, is just ride the ride and ignore the game.
What's annoying about it is that they have, like, VR. I don't remember which park has it, or maybe it's an attraction or something in Japan, but they have VR versions of Mario Kart that are full VR that you just sit in, like, a little, basically sit in a racing chair and you play the game. And that looks like a lot more fun than that ride. So it's just weird to see them outdone years prior.
Going to our chat room over at twitch.tv/VOGNetwork, because we do tape live, of course, every Sunday night at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific at the Voice Geeks Network, twitch.tv/VOGNetwork. Fifth Dream in chat says, sounds like a hygiene issue. Like, I wouldn't want to wear something hundreds of people already have. So they do the same collection of the goggles thing. Yeah, that Disney does. They do. I think they steam sterilize it or something. I don't know what the system is, but it's a similar collection to what they do at Midway Mania.
Wouldn't you think you'd sterilize it, though?
Yeah, I guess maybe if you don't realize that, yes, they collect the visors and put them in the thing, like, it's a thing.
As far as I'm aware, that's actually an operational requirement for rides like that.
I'm sure it has to be. I don't know what the magic is, but it's whatever Disney's doing, they're doing in that regard. Let's see. Questbuster says the Mario Kart ride sounds like a cool concept to try out at least once. It is. And I'm not going to sit here and lie and say, oh, it was bad. No, it was really neat. I just didn't care for like the game thrown into the Blacklight ride. Like, I kind of just wish they'd lean into one lane or the other. But I'm not going to sit here and say it sucked. Like, it is really cool. You should do it once in your life. And that's kind of how I feel about Nintendo World as well, is that for me, Nintendo World was just it was almost overstimulating in a way. Like, there was a lot of shit everywhere and a lot of people, but I feel like there's not a lot for you if you don't buy that extra $40 power band, which is really for the kids. Like, you know, there's all these question marks and you go bing, 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 and there's other little neat things to see. But I think a lot of it is just like, there's people everywhere, even at the nighttime event where there was less kids because it was a nighttime event, which, by the way, is what it made it very attractive for us to go. But you still have teenagers everywhere. And just like, I felt like there wasn't a lot to do outside of that ride. And I understand Florida has the Donkey Kong ride, which is pretty cool. We don't have that in Orlando or Hollywood. We don't have that in Hollywood. But we did have that. We did go to the Toadstool Cafe. You have to make a reservation for it. And I don't want to call it upscale dining, but it's better than burger and fries. Although you can order a nice burger and fries if you want, but I had like spaghetti and meatballs, and it was a flaming fire flour dish, 'cause the marinara was just a little bit spicy. And there was all sorts of things you get. They had, you know, salads and healthier choices too, if that's what you really wanted. Or if you wanted really unhealthy shit, they had full on like shakes that were green and, you know, themed. But I thought it was cute, but apparently it's extremely popular. We had to get a reservation at 10:15 at night to go there. So I ate very late last night, but it was, you know, that was as far as like theme park dining goes. You know, it's hard to touch Disney. Like, it's no Carthay Circle, but it was nice. And for that kind of food, I'm, dare I say, reasonably priced. Alan took a screen cap and put it on his Blue Sky, and one of our friends replied, "Mama, that's just Seattle prices." I thought that was funny. So I was expecting worse, but it was fine. So yeah, that was cool. So we did some other standard universal things, but they do have some other special things. So can I quickly just mention, and Jamie, you'll love this because I'm going to bring up Star Trek, but it might surprise you. So one of the other limited things they have there is Star Trek Red Alert, where they actually have set pieces from the Enterprise D that they used in Star Trek Picard that they have on display. But instead of just having them on display where you can walk in and see them, they do this whole like experience type thing. Like, think the Star Trek Vegas ride, but way worse because it's temporary. The actors are doing their best with kind of a subpar script that is a plot to move you from room to room to see things, where, of course, the final room is the actual bridge that you can see that stuff. But I'm just going to be real. As a Star Trek fan, I found it kind of bad. I didn't care for it. I really just wish it was an open museum. We could have just gone in and seen the set pieces. The actors
can't just be the Star Trek experience.
Exactly. Like, the actors were very much just wearing cosplay costumes from bought online. The script was mediocre at best. And I really think some of them were probably having to read off teleprompters. Although I will say there was a half Klingon and she looked fierce. She looked amazing. Some of the makeup was really good. So I'll give it that. But I when you're in the bridge room and they're acting out the final scenes, if you look up, there's a giant hole in the ceiling where you can see the entire studio rig of the studio that they borrowed to do this limited edition thing. And it really takes you out of the experience. So I think it was just like, it's only a 3-week event they're doing this fan fest thing. And so I think that's why, like, it felt temporary. That's the problem with it. It felt temporarily.
Well, you should leave feedback on it.
Funny enough, I got selected for the random survey at the end. And I agreed when I took the survey to not
have it.
I agreed when I took the survey to not tell you what's in the survey. So I can't tell you the questions they asked me, but I will say feedback has been given on that topic. That's all I can say.
Good.
Yeah. But, you know, well, here's the reality about Universal. And I know it's not a theme park podcast, but we'll get into games soon, I promise. The reality is Universal's going to lose that Simpsons section in the next couple years. That thing's on borrowed time, because remember who bought Fox not that long ago? Disney. Do you think Disney's going to let their biggest theme park competitor keep that? I don't think so. So I don't know what the agreement is, but in a couple years, you can fully expect, probably after that Fast and Furious ride is done, which looks fucking impressive. If you're into roller coasters that are bonkers, that I will say that ride looks impressive. But I will say once that's done, I think Simpsons is on borrowed time. That whole section's going to be gone. I would love to see them put a sense of permanency with Star Trek. I don't know how that works because Star Trek is Paramount, but Paramount is no longer in the theme park business, as those of us that live in Northern California know, because of what happened with Great America and now the fact that the Knott's people own it. And every time I tell people, did you know there's a Mass Effect ride at Great America? People go either one of two things. One, what? I didn't know there was a Mass Effect ride. Or two,
need to go see that.
Or two, that's still there?
I still need to see that. Yeah. You know, I never got to go.
Yeah. You should. We should go on a theme park day. That would be fun. I'd love to go. I'd go again. I will say there was one other experience I'll mention quickly, and this is adjacent to gaming. They also had a Dungeons & Dragons walkthrough. And I'm not sure what – I mean, it was obviously supposed to be references to the movie, which I didn't see. Sorry. But I got the game references.
You have to see the movie.
I know. But
it is fantastic.
I got the game references and everything. Like, there's mimics and shit. Like, I know enough from playing the games and any JRPG or otherwise RPG in the last, you know, years of my life. I understood everything. It was the same thing. You were with actors. You were moving from room to room. I will say I did think the D&D one was put together better. I did. It felt like they put more money into it because they built a whole animatronic beholder. That's what you call the eyes with the Medusa things, right? Mm-hmm. A beholder. So they had like a big beholder at the end that looked really impressive. And the actors were getting into the show. And it was community theater, but it was cute. It was cute. I thought it was better than the Star Trek one, to be quite honest. And that really surprised me because I'm a Trek fan. And when it comes to D&D, I'm like, I haven't even seen the movie, but it was cute. So Phil of Nine in chat says, these experiences give the Museum of Ice Cream vibes very, very much. It was, you know, but I, you know, it's a new thing for Universal. And I think if they just invest a little more in it, like that whole Simpsons thing going down, I would love to see them set up a permanent Star Trek thing. Fucking rebuild what you had at the Hilton 20 years ago at the Star Trek experience. That shit was amazing. Rebuild that at Universal. Again, I don't know how the Universal and Paramount arrangements work, but fucking figure it out, because that would be amazing to have a sense of permanency. And I'll tell you, people cosplayed, people dressed up, and Star Trek outnumbered everything else. But there was a fair amount of Wizard Boy, and there was a fair amount of damn it. Oh, Back to the Future, which unfortunately we ran out of time and didn't get to do that experience, because you could actually go into the lower lot where they filmed it and they had a whole dance party thing going on. Unfortunately, we didn't get around to it. I did see just a little bit of Dungeons & Dragons cosplay, but Star Trek showed up. So there's a lot of people that were there really into it. Yeah, Pop Culture says that Trek experience would be perfect for something like that. That's what I'm saying. Like, do it. Just put the Star Trek experience there. But we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, okay, sorry, theme parks. Oh, and one quick shout out. I do want to say, at the Kylie concert, I had a brief little run-in with Pixel Pacas and their partner, and so I got to say hello, so I just want to give a shout out. It was lovely to meet you both, and I hope you enjoyed the concert. I loved it. I was so happy I went a second time. I really was. So, yeah, Kylie's a goddess. What can I say? All right, A Pod Culture says, I need another Warp Core Breach. They did have like a 10 forward. They had like a Quarks Cafe and a 10 forward, which were just reskinned versions of their normal restaurants that were selling specialty drinks and stuff. But I purposely wasn't drinking last night because I had a 6-hour drive today. So that was no. And we did drag brunch yesterday as well, which I didn't get into. But I got to go to the Mickey's in WeHo, which is a very, you know, well-known.
Yeah,
well-known gay bar.
I went there during DragCon a couple of times.
Yeah. And I saw some great queens there. I had a really good time.
Is Mayhem still hosting?
No, my God, I wish I could have seen Mayhem there. No, the queens were not drag race queens, but they were still very talented.
Because I was there when Mayhem was still hosting it after a drag race.
I think the lead's name was Beatrix Couture, and then her sister Kiki or Kiko Couture was one of the acts, and then
okay.
I do not remember the name of the third act. I regret. I'm sorry. I'd have to look it up on my phone. But they were all very talented. So yeah, they did a good job. Anyway, let's, hey, Pixel Pockets in chat says, it was so nice to see you. The concert was awesome. Yes. Thank you for the kind words from you both. And it was great to meet you and all that good stuff. So I'm sorry I didn't get to spend more time with you, but we had met up right before Rita Ora was about to take the stage and we wanted to see it all. So, all right, let's get into video game news. And there's some big news this week. Loki, you want to start us off? We kind of knew this was coming, but it sucks.
Who could have guessed?
I know, it sucks to hear. It sucks to hear, but here we are.
Let's take a moment and once again thank Nintendo. Thank you, Nintendo, for being the leaders in raising prices on your fucking games when they don't need to be raised. And I don't want to hear about tariff bullshit because they were going to do it anyways because they justified their game being that price. I mean, when you think about it, most games now are sold digitally, so really, they don't have to manufacture those cartridges, and I'm not even sure if Mario Kart is one of those ones that actually has a cartridge in it, because it may be just one of those, yeah, it's a license on the cart type thing.
I believe they have confirmed first-party releases are not that.
Okay, well, that's good at least, but once again, doesn't matter, because guess what? Microsoft's saying, hey, we want to copy Nintendo too. And so, of course, being that door has been, you know, thrown wide open, now we have them saying that, hey, all first-party game prices will hit $80 by the holidays. But that's not all. Guess what, folks? You wanted to afford that wonderful console that's been out for a while because you were being responsible and saving up for it. Well, fuck you. We're going to raise the prices because tariffs are fucking us. But also, I don't know if they're just raising them in the United States or maybe across the board, because I know in Europe there's like certain things that are going up in price as well on top of that. So let's see. So the Xbox Series S now is going to be $379.99. That's the 512 gigabyte one. Then we have a 1 terabyte Xbox Series S for $429.99. The Xbox Series X Digital, $549.99. Xbox Series X, $599. $599. That's right. And then finally, the Xbox Series X 2 terabyte Galaxy Black Special Edition, $729. Why?
Well,
why is it so much more?
I can tell you that I'm going to guess what's happening here. I'm going to put out this theory is that the hardware is clearly because of the tariffs. Microsoft is not going to purposely price their console above Sony, especially when they're not winning the console race right now. Now, you can argue Microsoft is still making headways on other fronts, things like Game Pass, what they do within Windows 11, et cetera, you know, potential handhelds in the future. Though if I were Microsoft, I would hold off until this tariff shit is under control. But I think, obviously, the tariffs are to blame for the hardware increases. DJ Rama S in chat says, I expect Sony to do the same this week. I 100% do as well. I don't know what kind of stock they already have sitting in America. That's the key question. How much stock do these companies have sitting in America that they think they can safely burn through before the holidays? But I think Sony has to move their hand and make an announcement similar to this as well. It's coming. Here's where shit gets complicated. They did not have to raise the price of the games to $80. And Loki's 100% on that. And obviously Nintendo was the first. Although I wouldn't be shocked if there wasn't some type of, and I'm not saying the big three are in cahoots, but I wonder if there isn't some type of unsaid, like that the industry knew games were going to go to $80 this year one way or another. So what I don't like is the projection that the increase in the cost of games is also because of tariffs. That's where Microsoft loses me a little bit. I get that they were wanting to secretly raise the price of Call of Duty and shit to $80 as well. They wanted to follow suit. Hey, if Nintendo can do this, we're going to do this as well to, you know, get our people paid and what have you, because we have these huge teams creating these games and so forth. I get that. I do not like the optics of them announcing that the same day as what was clearly impacted by tariffs, because it makes it look like the tariffs is impacting the game prices, which maybe for physical editions it would. I will give them that, but for the digital editions it would not. I'm not a big fan of that, but I do think, Loki, whether we like it or not, the industry sort of agreed we were going to go to $80 this year.
No,
and Sony's going to do it.
Industry. No, the AAA companies decided this. And you know what? Fuck them, because seriously, like, it doesn't matter. Like, they could raise the prices all they want, and they could justify it all they want, and then you can have the stupid fucking corporate defenders. Seriously, fuck all of them. Showing me a wonderful little insert from KB Toys from back in the goddamn 90s, where, you know, Super Nintendo games were $90. Guess what, folks? Your games are much more than $90 right now. Because you see, back in the Super Nintendo days, your game, it's done. That's it. You got your game, it's complete, it's done. You're not paying $70 up front, $20 for a fucking, you know, season pass for something, $30 for some more DLC that may or may not come out. You get a fucking roadmap because the game's goddamn not done, because they found a way, oh, well, we could just patch it in later on. We're getting sold unfinished games for more fucking money with more monetization on top of all that. These companies are not scraping by pennies. They are making billions of fucking dollars every year, and they can fucking afford to pay their goddamn employees. But you know who they're paying instead? They're paying their fucking CEOs instead. So don't give me this fucking shit. I'm tired of fucking hearing about the entire industry not able to put out a game for $80 or less. Okay, they're not able to put out a game for under $80. Bullshit. Look at fucking Expedition 33. Yep. Look at the fucking Oblivion fucking remaster. Look at all these other great games that are coming out from indie studios for far less money and far more polished than this bullshit that we have to pay for every single year. Madden every single year is just fucking churned up bullshit year after year. People complain about it and they keep buying it. So don't give me this shit about how, oh, we're so poor, we're not feasible. Guess what? If your company cannot operate within those, you know, within that constraint, then you're not profitable. Then you have to just dissolve as a company. It's just not going to happen. And I'm not going to give them $80 because thinking that's going to the developers. Bullshit. They'll lay them all fucking off after they develop their characters, write their stories, put out their games or whatever. It doesn't matter if their game's successful, fails, whatever. They will write them off as literal just tools for their fucking industry. They're trying to get AI in there anyways already just to make the shareholder costs go up. So fuck them all. I'm sick and tired of it. And honestly, like, I hate that the impact that's going to have on the industry as far as developers go and the layoffs that they're going to be and stuff like that. And I hate thinking about that. We're already living in that world. I think this industry is ready for a crash. I think that everybody needs to come to Jesus and fucking just, it needs a crash so they can reset and get out of this bullshit that we're in.
I don't disagree. Yeah. I'm like, oh, Loki, you're so harsh on Nintendo. Loki, you maybe a little. I honestly don't disagree with anything you just said.
Because like, was the Grand Theft Auto going to come out for $100, and then Madden's going to be like, well, we deserve $100 because our game is that polished. No, fucking no, it isn't. But they're going to do it. It's going to keep going up.
You hit the nail on the head. People in chat are saying it, and we're all thinking it. We're all thinking it. But the people who don't realize this are the people in the boardrooms that should be shaking in their fucking boots at Clair Obscur Expedition 33. That game, and I haven't even played it yet. I've been so fucking busy, I haven't played it yet. I can tell you right now, that game is going to win Game of the Year at the Game Awards. I don't even have to play it. I could just see on your reactions. I can fucking see Metacritic, for better or for worse, what that site means. I'm telling you, that fucking game's winning Game of the Year. That was 30 people, most of them laid off from a AAA studio, that came together in France, put that game together, released it for $50, and sold a million copies in a genre that we have been told we don't want. Naoki Yoshida, I love him to bits. He saved the Final Fantasy Online franchise. He got this wrong when he said that people would not want to play a turn-based RPG with the fancy graphics, that they need to have the fast fluid stuff to go with the graphics. He got that wrong. And Clair Obscur Expedition 33 selling 1 million copies in 3 days, in addition to it being on Game Pass, is fucking proof that should have the entire industry in the boardrooms of the AAA companies shitting their pants right now. But they won't be, because they are too oblivious, because the people that are telling them, because all these websites, we'll get into this, that have the pulse on, you know, what gamers are really about, are going under now. So all these boardrooms have investors to rely on to get advice and shit. And investors are going
to
be like,
you can just talk to us.
Yeah. AI is going to be the big answer. This is what gamers want, is AI. No, the fuck we don't. But that's gamers and board executives and boardrooms aren't listening to this podcast. And if they were, they unsubscribed a long time ago, let me tell you. So but that game should have the entire industry shitting its pants. That being said, I could have said pretty much the exact same thing about Baldur's Gate 3.
And oh, God, Larian.
We haven't seen the changes yet.
So I think everyone's fucking afraid of Larian because they completely broke the mold. It's not that they were doing DLC. It's they were giving people more and they weren't charging for it. They're like, you know, we think that was a good idea from so-and-so's mod. Here's a whole new part of the game that's got those things that you were modding in. We just made it permanent. You know?
Yeah.
You want to mod your game? Here, just mod it all together. You know, oh, you want full, you know, game-making access to everything? Well, we'll tell these people so they'll tell you how to do it. You know?
Yeah, Bobby Blackwolf pointing out Hello Games as well, you know, despite all of the bullshit that No Man's Sky got in the beginning. Well, I shouldn't say bullshit because, you know, there was legitimate concerns in the beginning. I get it. It was really hyped and, you know, Sean Murray needed some PR control. But, you know, you haven't seen a game company pour the love into that game that you have from Hello Games. And they're a relatively very small team. I think they're a smaller group than the company that did Clair Obscur, to be honest. And, you know, they've made their money with all this time, with all the different versions and sales and worldwide sales and all that stuff. You know, that's a success story too. I think, Loki, when you say that the industry's going to crash, I think the AAA industry is headed for big trouble. You are absolutely right. I do think, I agree with that. I think
I don't think it's going to be a full industry crash because you've got a lot of indie studios out there. But
the smaller teams, it's the smaller teams are going to rise up.
And don't get me wrong, like I don't wish for like people to be laid off and all this 100%. Stuff. The problem is that they're already doing that. They're already doing that with
and who's not getting laid off? The bad decision makers,
stupid CEOs, and exactly. And it's just you're not bringing any profit or any sort of like anything into this. Like you're making bad decisions. I mean, sure, they may be profitable decisions, but like, I guess we're just at this, you know, point in time that, you know, ethics are out the window. It's just, what can we do to make this most profit? What can we do to gather as much profit for ourselves as we can is kind of unfortunately where people are taking it. I don't know what it's going to take for these companies to realize maybe they won't, I don't know, but at least we have options with indie games, you know, to a certain extent, and maybe they'll learn to try to jump on the next bandwagon stuff, although they really shouldn't be trying to jump on bandwagons and, you know, instead just coming up with original ideas.
The people at the top of the existing AAA industry and the people at the top, underline bolded, we do not need those people to figure out the secret to success. They're not going to fucking find it. What we need is for these people, you know, we always say, we hope these folks that get laid off are able to find something else or are able to start their own studio and able to do this thing. And the reality is not everybody has the capital. Not everybody has the investor to back this. But thank gosh, the team behind Clair Obscur did have that because now they're setting a blueprint for the fuck you need Ubisoft. You don't fucking need Ubisoft. You don't. Fuck them. Look what they did without them. And there's going to be more. There's going to be more. Bobby in chat says, I said the AAA industry will crash for years and it hasn't happened yet. Though, you know, I get it. I get it. I feel like we've been saying that too as well. I do feel like there's a lot more factors now that are going to accelerate that, like tariffs and that whole thing. Bobby Blackwell also says the AAA movie industry equivalent is also in a rut like this. Absolutely. Now, the one thing I did want to say about, you know, Microsoft, because you what's interesting is what you called out. You called out Clair Obscur and Oblivion Remastered as examples of what, you know, indie studios can do, even though I think we should clarify, of course, Oblivion Remastered being a Bethesda game isn't exactly indie. Yeah, however, the studio
not an $80 game.
But the studio that zhuzhed it up is also a little more independent. I can't remember. Volt or something? What was the name of the company that did that? V something? Volcom? No, that's a Tron thing. I don't know. So the company that did that is a little bit more, you know, smaller. But what's interesting about both of those games they're on Game Pass. And what didn't Microsoft increase the price of this week? Although, to be fair, they did in the last 6 months. Game Pass. Just kind of interesting that by raising the price of games, Microsoft is actually making a better argument for Game Pass. Especially with two huge games on it right now. And more to come with your Call of Duty and, you know, other Microsoft things. It's just something interesting. That's all. All right. Well, I'll be curious to see what those console sales look like, because I think it's going to be slim to none. I think everybody knows they can get those things cheaper. I think the secondhand market is going to become very interesting. Thank you, Virtuos. Thank you, Questbuster was the studio that worked on Oblivion. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with those consoles. And I think Sony, like Ramad said earlier in chat, and I think a lot of you are thinking it too, Sony is probably going to follow this with hardware very soon. We'll see. All right, let's...
And their games. Why not? They'll raise them again. Why shouldn't not? They? They just did.
Everybody else is doing it. Why can't we? But we'll see what happens with the sales. And you know what's interesting? I always say Nintendo is immune to this when it comes to sales. I don't know if that will be the case. I think people may get a little picky choosier with their game buying. I think Mario Kart is going to be a false flag, because Mario Kart is bundled with most Switch 2s at this point. I think Mario Kart is going to be a false flag. I will be very interested to see how things like Zelda's $90 edition and all this. I'll be very interested to see how that actually sells.
Well, and that's the thing that's kind of funny about it, too, is like I watched someone like industry analysts like talk about like what they thought based off of the sales of stuff. And they're like, yeah, look at Mario Kart sold so well by itself, too. I'm like, yeah, because people couldn't buy the bundle. It was probably sold out. So they were buying it separately instead. Like, it's not that it's people aren't just buying the game by itself. It's just ridiculous. But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, let's be honest, like. Games can go up as much as they want, but what's not going up along with that is
the minimum wage.
People's salaries. Yeah. Like, people's salaries are not going up that. Everything is getting more expensive. It is going to affect everything. That is just the people are not going to go without food to have Mario Kart World, okay? Like, it is just going to be a thing that happens, and it's going to hopefully get to a point where people are more selective about the games that they're picking, because then if a game is coming out unfinished from EA or whatever the case may be, that people are just not buying it, because it's like, listen, man, that's like $90. I can't buy a game that is essentially broken with a promise that it'll be fixed in 6 months or 10 months or however long. You know, it's just not worth my money. It's worth a lot more than that. And I think hopefully people will just put a stop to it eventually.
Yeah.
Because it can't go forever.
S200 Matt says gamers are going to go without games if they can't afford it. Bobby Buckle says gamers won't go without games. They'll just sail the high seas. Both are correct. S200 Matt, I do think you're going to see the secondhand market. And I think you're going to see ways that people get games cheaper, which is basically piracy.
Gamers are going to actually play their backlogs.
Exactly. The backlogs, these little retro sticks like Loki was talking about last week that have a bunch of old games on them. And,
it plays Switch games too. But like, no, but it's mainly meant for like, yeah, older games. And there's a lot of stuff I'm looking forward to getting back into, like, you know, trying some of these older games.
So. Rin Mari in chat says, personally, the price hike doesn't really impact me as much because I mostly play lower budget indie games that are usually no more than $30. And I think that's what a lot of people are going to start. You're going to see more things that are a huge success, like Balatro, Vampire Survivors, you know, those types of things that are relatively cheap and doing very well right now. So Questbuster says, on Loki's note, I'll be picky by looking more to Game Pass, which already has so many titles to try out, Steam with its sales, or just waiting several months later for prices to drop to something more reasonable. So,
well, hopefully they don't start going, I mean, they kind of already are with some of the stuff with Game Pass and the multi-tier things, but like, hopefully it doesn't get worse where it's like, oh yeah, these $90 or $80 games or whatever, they're just not going to be included in Game Pass day one or something like that, unless you buy the fourth ultra super tier that, you know, is even more expensive or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Here comes
we'll see. I don't know. What
here comes the return of Gamefly, which actually I believe is still a thing. And I think I saw some chatter online about this, but maybe there's going to be demand for, you know, just having, you know, paying a monthly fee to rent a game temporarily, you know, to, especially because it'll work with the cart licenses and all that stuff. So it'll be interesting to see. Bobby Blackwolf says, I still have Gamefly and I'm absolutely keeping it, even though they raised the price. Anyway, let's move on. Let's talk about our gaming weeks and what we've been playing, Game Pass or otherwise, around the gaming sphere. Dark Soccer, we'll go to you. How was your gaming week?
It's about the same as always. I've been playing... I didn't actually play Mass Effect this week. I played a lot of Palia just because I was pretty unwell on Friday, and I was still feeling under the weather last night and better today. Definitely Dead by Daylight, and then, you know, a few other random bits and bobs. We're getting a Portal pinball.
Oh, I was like, ooh, like a portal to hell in your garage?
No, we're going to have the Portal pinball.
Well, that'll be fun. Good for you.
A little bit.
That's great. Awesome. All right. Well, then we'll go to Loki. How was your gaming week?
I was mostly playing Minecraft this week, as usual, like I always do. And then I was working on setting up my Retroid Pocket Flip 2. So I think I have it pretty much done. I'm about like 95% done with that to get all the games on there. Man, Vita emulation is a pain in the ass, I must say. But it is exciting to see how well it runs. Like I said, it does run some Switch games. I did get Mario Odyssey when I turned down the resolution a bunch on it to run somewhat well. Not that I'm probably going to be playing that because I've already played through that whole game before. I just wanted to see what will actually run on it. But yeah, the Mario Kart stuff, looking forward to that. Got all the Animal Crossings on there. So that'll be fun. And funny enough, actually, a lot of like indie games, like a lot of aftermarket games for all these different consoles and stuff. Checking those out in translations, be able to play a lot of stuff that hasn't been put out there. Now, I of course need to talk about like my Blue Sky post earlier this week. So one of the things I decided to do this week as well is put my game Pixel Poops number 2, which was developed for the Nintendo Entertainment System, to drop that to free because everyone's paying already a ton in just everything. And so why not just be able to enjoy something for free without having to pay a ton of extra money for things? So it is free. I mean, to be honest, I wasn't really making anything off of it anyways, but it is going to be free for ever, at least digitally. If I do like a physical release later on, I'll have to obviously pay for that. But
you know what? To anyone right who now, says you bitch too much about the high prices and all that stuff, you're putting your money where your mouth is. That's for sure. So that's incredible news. If folks haven't checked that out, you literally have no excuse now. It's free.
Yeah. And then I've sent YYR some messages. I talked to him like a while ago about, you know, putting the Steam version for free. So that should eventually follow suit as well as soon as he gets my messages. but I know he's busy. So, but the very least on itch.io, it is free. So you can get it there. But yeah. So hopefully you guys enjoy that. And just glad to get people to be able to check it out.
And again, that's Pixel Poops number 2 on itch.io, and the storefront or store name is Techmaster Games, is itch.io, right?
Yes. If you want to, it is a free download, but there is an option to, you know, pay money if you'd like to. You don't have to, though.
Which SSJ100 Matt in chat says, buy the game now on Steam if you want to give Loki money, but you do have a tip jar, which is also available to give money to.
Yeah, itch.io, it's basically, you know, free, right? But you can put any, it's, you can either put $0 or any amount on there, but yeah, you don't have to pay for it.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's move on. My gaming week. I pretty much, you know, talked a lot already about my trip and everything, so I won't add too much to it, except I did play Final Fantasy XIV with the latest patch. I've missed a few days of cosmic exploration, so I'm curious what all got built while I was away. And then the new Diablo 4 season started. The twist in Diablo 4 this season is a little bit, I don't know, I guess I'd call it Blue Mage, because you fight bosses, and then when you take down the boss, you kind of get their power, and you can, you know, cycle four of them in at a time and sort of, you know, change your builds around it. So it's kind of a neat little mechanic, I guess. There's been some controversy around the difficulty spikes in the game and, you know, how they're making it harder to get into tournaments. I'm not far enough along in the season. I only got to maybe level 37 before, you know, my weekend started. So I can't really talk about that yet. But so far, I like the little twist on Diablo 4. Oh, I will say this. They changed the battle pass completely. You no longer have like a tier 1, 2, 3, kind of like you have in Dead by Daylight or Fortnite, where you unlock things by tier. Instead, they made it so that you earn tokens and you use the tokens to buy what you want from the battle pass, which I think will be more popular. I'm not sure it makes the battle pass as... I think people will spend less to get what it is they want, but maybe this is a that is the play by Blizzard to get more people to buy into this system, because I'm going to guess not a lot were. So that's kind of my thought. It's kind of a weird system. I don't like that now the smoldering ashes don't unlock for forever, and they took away the ones that boost XP. That part I don't like, but, you know, otherwise I don't have too much to complain about. I'm still playing Diablo 4, so that should tell you that. I will make it a point to get to Clair Obscur this week. Now that trip season is settled a little bit until my trip at the end of June. So I have a few weeks. Okay. Let's move on and get into other gaming news, because there was quite a bit that happened this week. And
seriously,
a lot of changes on the internet blog front, right, Loki?
Yep. Everybody is just getting shut down, sold, who knows. But fandom has essentially shut down Giant Bomb, I guess. They apparently, Giant Bomb had some sort of falling out with their parent company, Fandom, and I know that a few of the people actually left there as well. So apparently, creative director Dan Reichert announced that he will no longer appear on the Giant Bomb cast, and Jeff Grubb is confirmed that he is no longer with the company. And Fandom, they said that it's a strategic reset and realignment of their media brands. Mm-hmm. Whatever the fuck that means. Anyways, yeah. So I don't know if they're going to be kind of resetting it into some sort of AI slop factory type thing, or, you know, what they're going to be using their branding for, but... Yeah, I don't know. But that's not all. Polygon has been sold to Valnet, and also they have had to deal with massive layoffs. So, of course, this is also coming out through social media as well. Lots of different people, you know, stating that they're no longer with the company, including Chris Plant, who was the Polygon co-founder and editor-in-chief. I don't know. I think this is also kind of one of those things where they're pivoting into more of like a content farm type thing. I don't know. But yeah, that sucks. You know, some really good sites that are kind of going under because of this type of content. I mean, there's a lot of these that I've looked at for a while now that are just slop now. Like, you can hardly use them because of just the numerous guides or slideshows or whatever they want to do so they can get as many page views as possible to see as many ads as possible. It's just a mess.
The pivot to guides has been happening everywhere too, which
it's gross.
And unfortunately, AI is going to fuck them all with that, because AI is stealing those guides and putting it into the AI system, so that when people have those questions about, you know, how do I beat the boss on level 2, you know, that the AI is going to answer that now without having to go to those pages, because AI stole from those pages. So it's really a no-win situation, I think, for a lot of those. But I don't know. I'm going to be honest. I haven't read either of those sites in a very long time. One of those websites got rid of their biggest problem in 2017. That's all I'm going to say about that. But I just they never really worked their way into my rotation. I would see them linked on social media, which is the way that I think most people are getting their gaming news. And I think that's the reality, is that when so much news gets reduced to 300 characters or less, or whatever the limit currently is on X, it's 300 on Blue Sky. You know, when the content gets reduced to that many characters or less, you know, a lot of things get missing. We actually have a story coming up later that is exactly this, where I think a lot of the context gets missing because of that little short headline. But so many of us are getting our news from social media and those types of things now that, you know, we don't have a lot of space, I think, for those more long form articles, which I'm not saying there shouldn't be a place for those. There's some very well-researched, very interesting things that I read out there. Eurogamer still cranks out some bangers on that front sometimes. There's one pretty recently I read over there, I think. And, you know, there's you know, certain sites that do some really interesting, you know, long form reports. But the reality is most of those short hits end up getting taken by social media. So, yeah. Rin Marian chat says, my problem with going to news sites is being subjected to ads and getting shamed for using an ad blocker. I don't have a problem with ads. I have a problem with the bullshit barrage of ads, especially on mobile, that like are literally just there to kill your browser. And I would hope that the brains behind these organizations are very aware of the fact that I actually way prefer Safari over Chrome right now when I'm browsing mobile.
Hell yes.
Way prefer it for two reasons. Number one, it is very easy to flip to reader mode. Very easy. You do two taps and you're in a reader mode. That'll get you around CNN's paywall, by the way. Which, you know,
you have a second thing, by the way,
you can do that. And then with Safari now, like, let's say you get one of those shitty little videos that pops up in the corner, you just tap and you do hide distracting elements, boop, hide that, and it no longer bothers you. And it's incredible. And it sucks that we need things like that, but the industry did it to themselves.
For the record, if you're using Safari on a Mac and you have developer mode enabled, which is just a click, if you go and right click on something, inspect element, you can actually find the code for it and delete it from the active version that you're using.
Nice.
So it's just a blank area on the page. It's beautiful. You can hide attribute. You can delete node. I mean, if you reload the page, yeah, it comes back. But it's gone while you're using it. I'd do that for half of our stories, so yeah. I can at least see them be pretty. And also, reader mode is on macOS Safari.
Djarama S says Edge greater than Safari. I don't know about that, but I will, because
Safari is far better.
These are all opinions, but Safari they don't make it on PC. I'd probably use it if they did. If it was,
yes, they do.
Not anymore. No, they haven't made it for a long time. They used to, like 8.0 or 9.0 was. They don't make it anymore. And it wasn't well optimized back in the day either. It would probably be a lot better now if they would have invested in it on PC. But they don't. But I will say I use...
Nope. Ranma backs me up.
I swear. Okay, drop the download link, please. Drop the download link. I would say, and it needs to be the official download link. Do not send me to one of those sites that says grab old version or get, I want the official Apple download link for Safari on PC, please. I'll be waiting. But I was going to say with Edge and Chrome sucks now. Like Chrome sucks. I've switched pretty much to using Edge much more often. It's not, I still do Chrome out of habit sometimes, but yeah, I use Edge more than I use Chrome on desktop, I will say. So there is that. I haven't used Firefox in a while.
Oh, crap. But, actually, that's right. It is still, it looks like there is still the 64-bit version, but no. Okay, never mind. I stand corrected.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, so anyway, I don't know how we got on browsers from that, but the industry kind of shooting itself in the foot with the ad bloat. when social media doesn't, especially now Blue Sky, as more and more people are migrating, or Mastodon, let's, you know, be fair to both, you know, the open network protocols, let's say. And again, like Trek versus Wars, I myself may be on Blue Sky, but I root for both because they are not X. So I'm rooting for both to succeed, to be quite honest. But the thing about being the open network sort of protocol thing is that, you know, it's not, even if the official Blue Sky app were to add ads, you would be able to download a third party app and have no ads. That will happen in the next year. I guarantee it. Blue Sky's first party app is going to have ads at some point, and then you'll just download a third party app to get around it. That's going to happen as Blue Sky gets bigger and bigger. So there's that. So yeah, Rimari in chat says there's already third party apps for Blue Sky. There sure are, because there was a whole thing about Blue Sky was asked to suppress accounts in a particular country, or I think they risked being, and I don't know all the facts, so I am cutting corners, I fully admit. I believe they were risking running illegally there. Was it Turkey? Question mark. It was, or Turkey, or whatever you're supposed to pronounce it now. But
Turkey.
I think it was that, where they would be illegal to have in that country if they didn't suppress certain accounts there, because not every country has freedom of speech, and sometimes I fear we're not going to have it much longer. If you use third-party apps, you still see those accounts because they can't stop the app protocol. It lives in the cloud. No, it is not one particular person or one particular country. So if you use a third-party browser, you see all that stuff. But that's what leads to also some of the controversy. You know, I saw Ren Mari also say, I don't feel safe on Blue Sky. And I think that has to do with all the information that's public on a site like Clear Sky. You can see who you've blocked, who's blocked you, and all that. Some people don't like that. But that is kind of a downside to running openly like that, is that all that is available. They have said that they're working on some sort of privatization embedded within the app protocol for people that want private accounts. But I would expect that's still going to be another 6 months out. We'll see what happens in the future with that. So
I want people to know I blocked them.
Yeah, it's fine. And my problem with Mastodon, just to be fair to both sides, is that my problem with Mastodon is that some people ran their servers like they were HOAs. And if you didn't have, if you couldn't trust the server to be the right individual, you might end up with somebody who's just going to basically end up throwing your blog away, or, you know, you can trade, but like the URL you start directing people to is going to vanish because their hosted Mastodon thing ends up vanishing. And there's just some issues I had with that. I just felt Blue Sky was kind of hitting on that a little better, but you are free to make your choice. And again, I still support both because, again, Elon Musk can never own neither. So either is fine by me. DJ Rama S says, I know the two people who have me blocked on Blue Sky, and they can both kiss my ass. Only two? I have like 53 and they can all kiss my ass. I don't give a fuck. All right. The reality is, you're not like, I might have a hot take trademark that makes its way onto the Discover feed and somebody just decides they don't like it, so they're going to block me. Or there's a picture of me and they don't like my old face, so they're going to block me. And you just have to deal with the fact that some people are just mean.
Like, why should we care?
I know. I don't.
Fuck those people. They don't belong in my life. I don't care.
Yeah. They're lost.
I mean, why is it important?
Yeah. So
they've removed themselves from my universe. Thank you. You saved me effort.
Tiger Claw.
Eat a bag of dicks while you're at it.
Tiger Claw says there was a site that shows you who has blocked you on Blue Sky. Yes, it's called Clear Sky.
Yeah. I've used that.
Yep.
Because I had to laugh at certain people.
Yep. All right. Let's move on. Let's talk about another lawsuit that really shouldn't surprise me, but it's one of those things where, oh yeah, I kind of forgot this happened. But maybe what Nintendo was trying to avoid was that whole Streisand effect of, if you sue it, you're confirming it. Well, now that Nintendo's confirmed the Switch 2, guess what? They're suing Genki. You might remember that Genki had unauthorized mock-ups of the Switch 2 at the Consumer Electronics Show in 2025. In the lawsuit that was filed on Friday, Nintendo has accused Genki of trademark infringement, false advertising, unfair competition. So basically the fact that Genki was promoting accessories that were compatible with the Switch 2, at least they claimed, Nintendo says they didn't have official access to the console and they used the Switch logo in the process. They actually, I believe, used some posts on X in the lawsuit, too, that basically, you know, at one point, Genki said they do not own or possess a black market console, but they basically highly implied that they had access to all the specs. Like, they had somebody on the inside. You know, maybe they were getting information or buying it. You know, who knows? Who knows? But Nintendo is basically saying those statements were contradictory and inconsistent, but Genki maintained its representation to customers that the accessories will be compatible with the Nintendo Switch 2 upon the console's release. If Nintendo were to basically win this lawsuit, Genki would not have the rights to basically sell any accessories with the Switch 2 branding. It would be basically illegal for this company to put the Switch 2 name on any of their products, which would really fuck them up. So we'll see. I mean, could there be a settlement out of court, which these things tend to do? Who knows? But it is interesting to see Nintendo bring the hammer down. But I will say, for once, love them or hate them, especially when it comes to Nintendo's legal department, love them or hate them, you can't deny. You can't deny they did the smart thing here. They waited until the news was out there, then they sued them. They waited to be the ones and say yes confirmed, rather than let the lawsuit say yes confirmed, as has happened so many other times in the industry. So you love them or hate them, give Nintendo's legal department that ounce of credit that they waited till the right time to do it. And I think when this happened, I was looking at Genki going, they're gonna get sued. So I can't say I'm shocked. And I would say I feel sorry for them, but I don't. They were being very bold. And sometimes that type of stuff comes to bite you in the ass. So, yike. Anyhow, let's move on. Dark Sakura.
Okay, so talking about, though, people actually doing something good, Epic Games has actually set out to eliminate revenue fees for smaller developers. They've done a new fee structure going into effect in June, and it will apply to a developer's revenue on a per app basis. So after the first million in annual sales, apps will be charged the usual 12% fee for listing on the Epic's game store. So basically that will help small developers who may not expect to get those big sales to start with. And it's not the first time that they've done things to help out. In 2011, they basically were like, you know, don't worry about the royalty payments, at least for the first $50,000 in sales that were made with the Unreal Development Kit. In 2020, it was increased to cover the first million in lifetime sales for a project. So, they're I guess they're kind of fighting back and forth a little bit with Valve on this, because Valve in 2018, they cut their default 30% to 25%, and that's for lifetime per game earnings exceeding $10 million. And then it goes down to 20% after $50 million. But honestly, though, this is fairly generous for the smaller developers. So there you go.
Yeah, it's interesting to see the little store wars continuing, that, you know, there is a little competition in that space. And I'm sure there are plenty of other folks that would love to get in that space. I mean, technically, like, Good Old Games kind of tries to carve their niche in the whole, you know, preservation program. So there are even, you know, third options out there. But it's interesting to see how these two stores are trying to attract developers and exclusives and all that good stuff. So, yeah, yeah. Pod Culture says LOL store wars. Well, I guess it is May the 4th. So there you go. Revenge of the Steam tomorrow on this report. Who knows? All right. Let's move on and go to our next story. Loki, I'm sure you were shocked. I'm sure you were crying. I'm sure you were just like, how could this happen?
I just don't care anymore.
How could the bear is driving car? How can this be?
It's been delayed so many times. It doesn't matter until it comes out, whatever. But yes, Grand Theft Auto 6 has yet again been delayed another 6 months. Now coming out May 2026. Or not. Who knows? Nobody knows.
They're waiting for that $80 price tag to be standard so that they feel no guilt in charging $90.
Yeah, I'm sure they're waiting for that.
I don't think that has anything to do with it.
Maybe it'll go up to $100. Maybe if we just bide our time, you know.
For a collector's edition, absolutely.
I think for the standard price, it's easily going to be $90. They're gonna push the envelope, I think. I think they're going to try to.
I think it's still 80, and there's a robust way to spend more money inside the game with things like Grand Theft Auto Online. I think that's sort of the
shark cards will be back.
That's sort of the difference between Grand Theft Auto and this situation is that they have a very robust online economy as well.
Yes, they haven't made billions upon billions upon billions upon billions of dollars from this game or the previous game already. Anyways, I mean, I can tell you the reasons why they delayed it, but you know the lines already. You know, they need more time to polish it up to make it better. So I don't really need to read why.
Hey, if they aren't crunching as a result, like, that's actually good news, I think. You know, like,
are they not? Are we sure about that? I mean, I don't know. I think there's some pull quote
out there that says they're doing this in part to reduce their need for that,
I hope so.
I hope so, too. Like, I get it. A healthy amount of skepticism with that is totally appropriate. But, you know, we'll see what happens come April, you know, what the reports are saying in March or April next year before this goes gold, especially during the holidays, how bad they're maybe having to crunch during the holidays. So we'll see. But you know what? I remember when Animal Crossing got delayed, it got delayed to 2020 in March, and it ended up being the best delay Nintendo could have ever scheduled for a game. Not that I'm asking for COVID part two or, you know, but yeah, you know, sometimes delays don't end up being the end of the
world. How about second COVID?
No.
How about the one that just locks the people we don't like in their houses?
Well, how about super chlamydia? Because that's going to be a thing because of all the things that they're shutting down at the federal level. But anyway, I don't want to digress.
We're going to let loose a whole bunch of koalas into the world.
Yes. All of us ace people will be safe.
Bonds 006 in chat says, just asking how many years before they sunset the GTA 5 servers. Well after GTA 6 is already up and running, that's for sure.
When the servers look like they're dead is when they will shut that stuff down and retire that stuff. They're making tons of money. They'll keep it running forever.
All right.
As long as I can.
Well, hey, you know what? Let's use that to transition to a story about something else that kept support for a very long time. The Louvre, the museum in France, has ended their official support of the Nintendo 3DS console audio guides. This was actually a big deal when this rolled out in 2012.
It was going on for quite a while.
In 2012 there was a whole Nintendo 3DS Direct. Actually, no, it was in 2013, I think, was when the actual Direct was, but the 3DS audio guides, I guess, started a little bit earlier, and it told you all about exhibits in English, French, of course, and many other languages as well. And you could hear about the history of the Louvre, you could hear about the artwork inside, you could see high resolution images and all that good stuff. But the guide is set to go out of operation in September of 2025. They are saying the 3DS will be replaced by a new system. That's leading a lot of people to assume it could be a Switch or a Switch 2. I don't understand why it wouldn't just be mobile phones at this point. But I guess either of those is potential. But keep in mind, this museum is gigantic. There is over 780,000 square feet. I've actually always wanted to go. And it's not just for the Mona Lisa, but like, I love those museums you can just get lost in all fucking day. Like the Museum of Modern Art in New York, I all like when I went, my biggest regret was I really should have booked all day for this place. I didn't book myself enough time. Or the
Smithsonian. That way at Vid Young.
Or the Smithsonian, which isn't even just one museum. Yeah, it's obviously you need like a week.
I have literally gotten lost in the Smithsonian. Yeah. I will admit that.
Yeah, it's gigantic. So anyway, I would love to go here someday, but it's just, you know, instead I do these last minute trips to concerts and that's where my money went. So it is what it is. But yeah, for those that are going to museums and stuff, this guide will no longer be available. But it sounds like there's something new that's going to replace it, which I have no reason to think won't be a little bit better and maybe even show things in higher resolution and all that good stuff. So that's pretty cool. Let's move on to Dark Sakura.
Yes, let's. Now, this is not so good news. And in news of no one being surprised, EA basically is laying off about 300 to 400 positions. That's around 100 at Respawn. And then the others, I'm not sure exactly what these companies are thinking, but here is, a statement that was put out. It's like, we've made the decision to step away from two early stage incubation projects and make some targeted adjustments across Apex Legends and Star Wars Jedi. This came from Respawn. And so, and in January, EA had lowered its annual bookings forecast. So, yeah, it's coming down. And this is including canceling a Titanfall game. So this was all reported by Bloomberg a few days ago. Who's surprised?
Well, it's unfortunate.
I'm gonna read the bullshit statement that got released.
Okay.
And you know it's a bullshit statement because they try to do those fancy keywords, and I'll try to translate into English, okay? As part of our continued focus on our long-term strategic priorities, we've made select changes within our organization that more effectively align teams and allocates resources in service of driving future growth. So, translation, the CEO wants another Lamborghini, but if we don't make certain profits, he won't be able to afford it. So we're laying off all these people so that their pay goes to the Lamborghini fund. Sound about right?
Yeah, unfortunately, it sure does. It's sad. You hope that these people land on their feet somewhere. You hope there's a Claire Obscure story in here somewhere. But the reality is there are some people that are going to take this and with the layoff news and everything and go, you know what? I'm going to take these skills to it. I'm going to take these skills to the banking industry or the insurance industry, or, you know, try to find a compatible type of thing for my skills in another industry. The games industry just isn't for me. And that's sad that we're going to lose some great art because of that, because billions wasn't enough, or, you know, millions wasn't enough. They needed billions.
You see they're having a big massive sale, by the way, on Steam right now?
No, I didn't. I haven't been on Steam in a little bit. So.
Like the Mass Effect Legendary Edition, $6.
Yeah, that's been really marked down in a few sales now, but yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
The Dragon Age games are pretty, you know, going down. There's a lot of stuff. So yeah, just thought I'd mention it.
Cool. All right. Well, let's move on to Loki.
So Nintendo's doing some updates in preparation for the Nintendo Switch 2. So there was a brand new Switch update, version 20.0.0, which added the system transfers to Switch 2, as well as the new console game share features via virtual cards. However, some folks are saying that they don't like the changes because they can't play one version of the game across two systems at the same time, which, I mean, yeah, that makes sense that you can't do that. I think that if you were able to do that prior, that sounds like an exploit that they just patched now. But what they used to do is essentially that one person starts the game and then while the game is running, transfers that game to another person who then starts the game and then starts playing on that to, like, say, for example, play Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. That sounds like an exploit to me. So it makes sense that it doesn't work that way. I don't know why people are disappointed about this, but okay. I mean, I can't take a game and make two games out of it, so I don't know. At the very least, with the next Switch console, you still got that kind of share play stuff that they had with like the 3DS and DS and stuff like that. So that'd be kind of cool. But yeah, unfortunately, you're not going to be able to convert one game into two to play Mario Kart online.
You cannot wish for more wishes.
Yeah, you cannot wish for more wishes. Along with that, they also made some changes to the eShop, especially on how they show the best sellers. So best sellers originally would show the, it was arranged by total downloads over the last 14 days. And so you would get a lot of shovelware stuff that just kind of releasing games constantly so that they would always be in the best sellers or newly released list type things. However, now they're calculated based off of the last three days worth of revenue that those games had made. So based on the sales. That is better. There's still an issue with a lot of shovelware stuff. Hopefully that gets a little bit, you know, less of a problem on the Switch 2. But yeah, I mean, any improvement's better than what we had.
I'm curious if anyone's out there has used that virtual card update. I looked at it and I was like poking around, but you know, I don't, Alan barely plays his Switch that he has now. He wants a Switch 2 because he says he'll play. He says he'll play Switch 1 games on a Switch 2 because that's how he is. I said, okay, whatever makes you happy. But I have not yet really experienced the trading thing to see how that all works. So I'm curious if any of you have it. Also, Alan and I are not currently on a family plan, but I'll put him on my plan once, you know, he's actually playing a Switch. So we'll see. All right. Anyway, earlier in the show, I mentioned, hey, there's this story that I think maybe social media's abbreviation could have kind of ruined. And that has to do with this Chrono Trigger remake news. I mean, we all kind of feel like a Chrono Trigger remake is going to happen at some point, but feelings don't make things true. And it doesn't make, especially doesn't make them true today. So apparently what happened is that there was a panel that was happening in Italy or something. Napoli Comic Con was happening, and Yuji Horii was actually one of the guests that was there. And through some news that came in through Reddit, Yuji Horii confirms Chrono Trigger remake at Comic Con in Naples, where basically the audience kind of went crazy because he said something along, and the translator said, "If this is true, this is big. Give me a confirmation," says the person who's running the panel, and the translator says, "You heard nothing." So there may have even been like a translation weird thing that was going on. And sure enough, later on, an update came in. There was footage from the panel, not sort of, it was in Italian, it was in Japanese. They say it was discussed about a remake of it, but then in a event that came later, Yuji Horii came out and said, no, in reviewing of the footage, it was only brought up ever by the translator. It was not actually brought up by Yuji Horii. So through this game of telephone where one people saw it, reported it to Reddit, interpreted it a different way, that went onto social media, blah, 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 blah. It basically, yeah. It became this, oh, Chrono Trigger remake confirmed by Yuji Horii himself, which he's not going to do at a random Italian Comic-Con. No disrespect to the Italian Comic-Con, which I'm sure is a fine event. No disrespect, but he's not going to, you know, unveil it. People were just assuming he fucked up and said something he wasn't supposed to say. But that clearly didn't happen either in this type of situation. So, yeah. Dark Tetsuya says this was a roller coaster for sure. It sure was. And you know what? I'm sure Square Enix has heard the cries for a Chrono Trigger remake. And honestly, a lot of it hinges probably on how Dragon Quest does in the remake. Because Square Enix doesn't think people want turn-based RPGs anymore. But again, this whole Clair Obscur ought to be making them turn their heads right now, especially since you know Final Fantasy 17 is well into development at this point. And I don't think they're going to be able to turn the ship around with whatever they're doing for Final Fantasy 17, be it online, be it, you know, a single player game that's more action oriented like 16. We don't know. There's a million ways that game could be going, but you know that game is well in development, because I think the thing they are going to do this time, they're going to follow 16's model of, we are not announcing this shit until it's out in 18 months. We're not going to do this 10-year lead up like we did with Final Fantasy 15. So But you gotta know they're looking at it. So I think it just goes to show that sometimes a simpler time and a simpler game is really the games that people want. So that takes us to our next segment.
And now it's time to travel back to a simpler time, where I'll dive into the vault and pull out a classic and tell you about it. It's time for the classic game of the week.
Jamie, I'm not sure there is a more appropriately timed classic game of the week ever before than what you are doing tonight.
You don't think I didn't do it on purpose?
You absolutely did it on purpose, and it's brilliant. Tell us all about it.
It is the 1983 Atari Star Wars arcade game. Yeah. If you skip a bit ahead, you'll also get to some music, too. I don't know if it's playing on the stream.
No, I haven't, anyway, I haven't really been playing. And especially this music could be a little dicey, but just with copyright claims. But yes.
At any rate, the game is a first-person rail shooter. It was designed by Mike Halley, and it was released in 1983 by Atari. It uses 3D color vector graphics to simulate the assault on the Death Star. Like from the original Star Wars. There are three different connected gameplay sequences. There's combat against TIE fighters, and then flying across the surface of the Death Star, and then the trench run. It then just keeps repeating and getting more and more complicated with the Death Star regenerating. Your X-Wing has a shield, and it protects from damage a certain number of times, and then the next hit ends the game. It has speech synthesis to emulate the actors in the film, and this was considered, it's like on the list of one of the greatest video games of all time. There were ports, there's all kinds of stuff, and there was also an arcade sequel that was sold as a conversion kit in 1985 as Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back, of course. So you don't have to, so in playing the game, you don't have to like destroy every TIE fighter. You just have to survive for a set number of time. And then you have three attack phases, in each wave. So there you go. So in the phase one, you hear the Imperial March or another one of the Star Wars songs, playing during the dogfight with Vader and the TIE fighters. And then base two, you have to go to the surface of the Death Star to reach the trench. It is emitted during the first wave of the game. So you get attacked by artillery on the surface. And then you get laser turrets on towers and all of that. You also get bonus for destroying the turrets. And in phase three, that's the trench run. So if you fail to hit the exhaust port, you lose a shield and you have to do the trench again. So if you manage to destroy the Death Star without firing at anything but the exhaust port, you are awarded points for using the Force. And then you go back to the first phase. So the game started development in 1981 with the title Warp Speed. And it was headed up by Ed Rotberg, who also worked on Battlezone. The controller was designed for Army Battlezone, which was a Bradley fighting vehicle training simulator that Atari made for the U.S. Army. Rotberg left Atari, and so Atari had signed licensing agreements with Lucasfilm, and then they finished the game as Star Wars. So it was actually tested with focus groups January 24th, 1983. By groups of 15 to 19 year old men, 20 to 35 year old men, and 17 to 30 year old women. So as for the ports, it was converted first by Parker Brothers using along with iMagic in 83 and 84 to come out on the Atari 2600, 5200, the Atari 8-bit computers, ColecoVision, and Commodore 64. The ColecoVision version was programmed by one Wendell Brown. Going forward, there was another conversion, 87 and 88, for the Amiga, Atari ST, Amstrad CPC, ZX Spectrum, Acorn Electron, and BBC Micro. and then further converted again for the Atari 8-bit and Commodore 64. Those versions were developed by a group called Vector with a K, Graphics with an X. Although the Atari 8-bit version was by Zeppelin Games, they were published in Europe by Domark. Brotherbund acquired the license to develop Star Wars games in the same year. And they published the Mac version, Commodore 64, and MS-DOS versions of the arcade games in North America in 1988, and then republished the Atari ST and Amiga versions in 89. The Amiga and Atari ST have mouse control and have digitized sound effects. The Mac version has sampled speech from the films, but no in-game music other than just like the attract mode. It also appeared on the GameCube in Star Wars Rogue Squadron 3 Rebel Strike as a bonus mini game that you could unlock after doing a level or doing a cheat code. And also in the US and some European countries, if you pre-ordered the game, you got a special copy with that mode unlocked upon startup. So the game was Atari's top-selling 1983 arcade release. They produced 12,695 cabinets. It topped the Playmeter in the U.S. for street locations in October 83. In Japan, Game Machine listed Star Wars on their November 1st, 1983 issue as being the most successful cockpit game. Compute magazine also said the Atari ST version was, quote, amazing, smoothly animated. It was also reviewed in Dragon magazine, the Brotherbund versions for MS-DOS, Amiga, ST, Commodore 64, in this Roll of Computers column, and said the game had 3 out of 5 stars. Macworld said it the Mac version was fast-paced action and challenging in higher levels. So, I mean, the only real criticism from Macworld was that the master disk-based copy protection, it was a little bit harsh, and said that that the only 3 playable scenarios were limited replay value. So, yeah, this is probably on the record of some of the top games ever. Several places have listed this as their in their top 50 games of all time. It's included in the top 100 arcade games of all time by the Killer List of Video Games in 2001. But like I mentioned earlier, the Star Wars arcade machines could be converted into Empire Strikes Back with a conversion kit. And also the Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi ones were included also as extra content on Star Wars Rogue Squadron 3 Rebel Strike. The Tastemakers LLC Arcade 1-Up division did a 3/4 scale recreation of the original cabinet with emulated versions of Star Wars Arcade, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi. In 1984, Robert Mrukzak, I hope I pronounced that right, scored 300 million points in 49 hours of gameplay, and that was the world record at the time. And then in 2005, Brandon Erickson set a world endurance record of 54 hours on a single credit with a score of 283 million. June 85, Flavio Tozzi, Dave Roberts, and Mike Ogren played as a team in turns for 5 days, 2 hours and 26 minutes on a single credit to get the world record score of 1 billion 12 points. Yes, one bunch of zeros, 12. Verified in September 1985 edition of Computer and Video Games. They raised money for charity that way. The score counter turns over at 100 million points. It was decided to put machines on a harder setting for Twin Galaxies International Scoreboard. In an 86 tournament, David Palmer scored 31,666,614 points in 7 hours, about 7 hours, a score that was published in the Guinness Book of World Records and remains unbeaten to this day. And there you go.
Wow.
Star Wars Arcade.
I always loved little messages on the planet. That was always my favorite. Like, may the force be with you. It's on that particular one we see in the video there live at Twitch TV. But yeah. I definitely agree. I can't believe you'd never picked this before, but I say that every week. But what a great timely pick. And the fact that, yeah, this is easily like one of the best, especially arcade games. I when we say games, there's a lot of competition, but seriously, like one of the best arcade experiences ever. Especially those old school cabinets were incredible. And it holds up really well. I do kind of want one of the 1UP reproductions. I mean, not that I'd get one now, because I don't think you can get them now. But every time I'm at Bobby's house at Black Wolf Manor and play his machine, I'm like, man, I should have gotten one of these. This is so fun. So, such a unique control mechanism, too. It's great. All right, let's hit on a few quick hit stories, and then we'll get to world release dates and towards the end of the show, believe it or not. But I'm okay with that because your boy is tired after a long day driving. All right, so let's get to rapid fire news. Loki.
Yes. So apparently Jack Black's one of the songs from the Minecraft movie has broken a Billboard chart record for the shortest song to be in their top 100. And that is, of course, Steve's Lava Chicken, which is a very, very short song. It's 34 seconds long. The previous record was held by Kid Cudi's song Beautiful Trip, which is 37 seconds long.
All right.
And it reached 78 out of 100.
I guess that's that. Probably the way they rank things now is streaming and stuff. I could see how like short songs, kind of, it's a little different now than buying a CD for a 30-second song. Like it, with streaming and everything, and people, kids are probably playing it at parties and stuff. It's probably racking up the streaming credits. So that makes sense. Dark Sakura.
So, Yuzo Koshiro. Here's a name that we all love and adore.
Love him.
The game he's involved with for Mega Drive or Genesis is called Eartheon, and the website has gone live, and it will be coming out for Switch, PS4, PS5, and Xbox Series. We know there is a Steam release coming out. I'm still trying to see if there's going to be a Genesis version. But we're going to have this published by Limited Run Games. Like, there's video of it running on a Mega Drive. But I want it. I want it. It's pretty. And the music, of course, is freaking fantastic. And I can't wait for the soundtrack either.
Nice.
It looks so good.
Yeah, the soundtrack will be the best part.
Of course.
But the game might be good too. I don't want to discredit that.
And there's also going to be an upgraded arcade release.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
With no slowdown and better audio.
Well, speaking of upgraded arcade releases of a different context, we have the news on the first release in the Arcade Archives 2 series. That's right. Arcade Archives was so big, so much. They are moving to Arcade Archives 2. I don't know. I don't think they need to rebrand with a 2, but I guess because now it's going to be a different selection of hardware that this is going to be on. So now these are games that will release specifically on Switch 2, as we previously seen and confirmed Arcade Archives 2 for the PlayStation 5. The first game will be Ridge Racer. I always love any excuse to say that. But here's the interesting thing. For the PlayStation 4, you still have Arcade Archives Ridge Racer without the 2. So I'm not sure if like the 2 is supposed to denote maybe a different set of features or like what's going on there. But I guess they're saying it's more fun and more user-friendly in Arcade Archives 2. I don't know. But I'm sure people are excited to hear that it's coming to the PlayStation 5 as well. And my assumption was the reason why we were doing an Arcade Archives 2 sort of series was because now maybe like the hardware they're going to emulate is going to be a little bit of a better step. So Orange Wright says the Arcade Archives 2 lets you know that it's PlayStation 5 and Switch 2. Arcade Archives 1 lets you know that it's PlayStation 4 and Switch 1, even though, at least on the PlayStation front, all that Arcade Archive stuff is backwards compatible. Watch out on Switch, though, because some of those titles that showed up in the doesn't currently work list were Arcade Archives, but that's not to say the developer won't fix those. Just know what you're getting into with all that. But that's still really cool about Ridge Racer, the original arcade release being available for the PlayStation 5, as it ought to be. All things come full circle in the end. Let's travel around the world and check out release dates and see what's coming full circle this week. Dark Sakura. Oh, I'm sorry, not Dark Sakura. Loki first. Then we'll do the UK.
I can start. I mean, shit.
You know what? Fuck it. Yeah, UK. UK first. Sure. You know what? The US doesn't deserve to be first this week. UK first.
Exactly. Exactly. So on May 5th on PC, drop Dookie.
Sure.
Like douchey. Like, I guess like a D-U-C-H-Y.
Oh, I thought you meant something else. Say? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No.
Duchy? You wanted okay, whatever.
Duchy, maybe. Also on PC, Spreadsheet, Among Us 3D on the 6th. More on the 6th is Captain Blood for PlayStation, Switch, Xbox, PC. Metal Eden for PS5, Xboxes, PC. High on Life for Switch. Sonic Rumble coming out on the 8th for PC and mobile. The Midnight Walk, PC, PS5, PSVR 2, Cash Cleaner Simulator on PC, Pixel Shire also for PC, Revenge of the Savage Planet for PC, PlayStation, Xbox, Bahamut and the Wok Wok Tree, okay, for PC, Imperial, PC, PS5, Xbox Series, and that's it.
All right, we'll go to Japan for the Japanese releases coming out of Golden Week last week. We're back in
yeah,
the swing
America,
of things.
Go last.
On the Nintendo Switch, we have Tokimeki Memorial Forever With You Emotional. We also have that in a regular and a deluxe edition. I think that's actually the only big release this week. That's on May 8th. That's it for Japan on the Switch. Checking the PlayStation 5 just to see if we're in a similar situation. Yeah, still pretty slow. I guess I thought maybe it would pick up out of Golden Week, but not really. But a new Tokimeki Memorial game is going to interest some people. So you got that. Loki, fine. US's turn.
All right. We have Age of Empires 2 Definitive Edition on PlayStation 5. Yet another Xbox game coming over to the platform. Captain Blood on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series. High on Life on Nintendo Switch. Metal Eden on PC, PlayStation 5, and Xbox Series. Toho Spell Carnival on PC. Empyreal. Nice. On PC, PlayStation 5, and Xbox Series. We have The Midnight Walk on PC and PlayStation 5. Revenge of the Savage Planet on PC, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, and Xbox Series. Spirit of the North 2 on PC, PlayStation 5, and Xbox Series. Vambrace Dungeon Monarch comes out of Early Access on PC. Yes, Your Grace, Snowfall on PC. On PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5, Little Kitty Big City. And last but not least, Spiritfall on Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series.
All right. Well, we have one more news story tonight, and what a shitty note to end on, Loki.
Well, you know, tariffs are affecting everything, and everything includes replica Atari 2600 cartridges. That's right. So Atari has been putting out some replica cartridges. I think those are
for that 2600 plus they did recently.
Yeah, yeah. The 2600 plus. So of course they wanted to share that, you know, tariffs have infected their business, and of course with the recent increases, they're going to have to raise the price of those cartridges up a bit. So the replica cartridges will go from $30 to $33. And then, of course, apparently, I know that there's some that were going up $10 as well. Also, all of the accessories are going up by $5.
I mean, all things considered, that's not a huge price increase, but it's the principle, right? Like, it's just... It's,
oh, I'm sorry. I read that as $10. It's 10%, so $3. Yeah.
But still.
Still, I mean, principle. It's everything.
Yeah.
It's a principle.
And what's that money going to? You know?
It's just, it's going to, yeah, the cost of those things. There's a...
not the Food and Drug Administration. Like,
it's not necessarily the games industry, but there's a great... oh, gosh. There's... I don't know if it was Review Tech. It was one of the tech channels. Gamers Nexus did a in-depth... like kind of piece on the whole tariff situation and how it's affecting PC parts manufacturers and like system integrators and stuff like that. and talking about kind of, you know, just how ridiculous it is. Like, some of these larger companies obviously are going to be able to absorb this, but smaller companies, they just may go out of business. It really gets down into the details. Like, there's some of these companies where they're talking about, like, we manufacture this PC case and, like, we're going to be fully transparent. Here's all the costs. Here's the cost of the tariffs. Here's all of this stuff. Here's what we would have to mark this up to even make a profit on it. Like, we are losing money on these, essentially. So it's a very interesting piece.
All right. Well, we'll see. I mean, and then who knows? Maybe, you know, Dear Leader changes his mind tomorrow. So we'll see what happens. As Joan and Matt says, elections have consequences. Yeah, we know. We sadly know. I don't know what to say anymore. So let's get to what you have to say in the listener roundtable, except I think the mailbag's been awfully quiet, except
it was something for you.
I did see that. So I did want to shout out E3VL, who has sent Minecraft codes to Loki and Pokemon codes to me in the past week. Although I will fully confess, I kind of stopped playing the trading card game. I think I finally just sort of, but maybe this is an excuse for me to pick it back up, because I think they did release a new set as well. But now it's like, oh God, am I going to be too far behind? We'll see. So sorry if I stopped liking all your stuff in that game, but I literally stopped checking it like maybe 3 weeks ago or whenever that shiny set came out, and I was getting shitty pulls every single day. So anyway, participate at orangelaundry.com is the place where you can send your future emails if you want. With that, I'm going to check with Loki on any last minute stories.
No.
Yeah. It's been a big week, but I think we hit on all the big stuff already. So we'll see what the coming days bring. Hey, believe it or not, we're like a month out from Summer Game Fest and all that news. And then the Switch 2 is released.
Year has gone by so fast and yet so slow.
That Switch 2, like the way Nintendo is releasing hardware on an accelerated timetable is wild. So, but we look forward to that. So. All right. Well, with that, we're going to do some final thoughts and wrap it up. Thank you, as always, for listening to Orange Lounge Radio. We are the show where every gamer has a voice, but we need more voices to put out on air. A nice 5-star review on a site like iTunes or Apple Podcasts or Spotify or YouTube or wherever you found this show, go an awful long way. Tell a friend. Help us spread the word. We need more voices here. Thank you so much. Let's get the final thoughts. I'm assuming we're done nice and early tonight, Jamie, so I'm assuming you're streaming tonight.
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to do some Dead by Daylight. I might do some Killer. We'll see what happens.
Fun.
Anything goes.
Have fun. Final thought.
Ow.
Okay, feel better.
Doing three ballet classes effectively a week is kind of owie.
Yeah. Bye. All right. Bye-bye. Loki, your final thought for us tonight.
My final thought is I am excited to get this Retroid Pocket Flip 2 fully ready to go. Setting up emulators is hard.
My final thought is...
Real quick. I was going to say, sorry. One disappointing thing, though, is I probably will not be able to get the dream of playing Final Fantasy XI offline on that thing. It's so complicated to do it. Like, it's so incredibly complicated. And now with the servers being shut down and everything... Good luck getting your system updates. Like, how do you do that?
Uh-oh.
I don't know.
Can you do the desktop one easier? Because I'll do that.
Yeah, it is. It would be the desktop version. It would be the PC version. So emulating the PC version. But it's hard to find a modded launcher that isn't specifically made for, like, just, like, one server. Something that is available for everything.
Yeah,
so they're not. And... Yeah, I don't know. It's very complicated.
All right. Well, Square just needs to release a Final Fantasy XI new version that's playable offline already, but they probably won't. let's see. My final thought is Clair Obscur Expedition 33. I'm coming for you this week. Finally, it's taking me way too long to get to you. I had such a good time in LA this last couple days. I think, you know, I was talking this through with my friend Victoria, who I used to do a podcast with, and one of these days I'd love to do a podcast with her again. And I was like, I think Alan and I went so hard on Disney for so many years that it kind of ruined the SoCal trips for us for a while. Like, we burned out. I shouldn't say ruined, like, we burned out. Like, nothing was wrong per se. It just got expensive. We just got burned out doing other stuff. But now that, like, we got to go this last week, I'm definitely going to come to LA more often. Maybe I'll go to the Game Awards finally this year. We'll see. And also, I love Kylie Minogue. She's incredible. Stan Kylie Minogue. She's unproblematic and fun. Have a good night, everybody. Bye.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for our live show, tune in to VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio nor Vogue Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.